Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1899 with a release date of January 3rd, 2014 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham Radio assists a rescue at sea off the coast of South Africa. Amateur Radio stands ready as a winter storm hits Hawaii. IPAW's data storage may be headed to the cloud. Tokyo High Power files for bankruptcy in Japan. A winter de-expedition to Finland's far north is underway. And a ham radio astronaut takes the ultimate self-portrait in space. Find out who it was on the first Amateur Radio Newsline report of 2014 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from near Houston, Texas, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
Ham radio came to the aid of a stricken fishing boat off the coast of South Africa after mechanical problems left it floundering at sea. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has more.
Trevor Brinch, ZS1TR of South Africa's Hamnet, became the main link in a sea rescue of that nation's southwest coast on Sunday, December 22nd. At 12:48 local time, harbor authorities at Stroosby reported that they picked up a Mayday on 29 megahertz from the commercial fishing vessel Maverick. They could not make any further contact with Maverick and did not know its position. Information obtained from talking to other boats that picked up the distress call was that Maverick could have run out of fuel and had been drifting for about 5 hours. 2 hours into the search, several 29 megahertz transmissions were picked up from the Maverick, but none could be deciphered. That's where the assistance of ZS1TR was enlisted. Using his amateur radio station and his experience in receiving weak signals, Brinch obtained the position of the stranded vessel, which he learned had drifted into shipping lanes. After it was located by a South African rescue ship, it was found that the Maverick had experienced a complete failure of one of its engines that subsequently had run out of fuel. The rescue vessel took the stranded Maverick in tow, and after a four-hour operation, they were safely back in Stroosby Harbor. Those involved in the rescue say that without the assistance of ZS1TR and Hamnet, this operation would have extended far into the night, with search planes having to be launched. Thanks to ham radio, that was not necessary. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, reporting.
Hamnet is the Disaster Communication Division of the South African Radio League. A strong thunderstorm brought penny-sized hail to parts of the Big Island of Hawaii Sunday night, December 29th, and once again, ham radio operators were there as severe weather spotters. The National Weather Service said the storm hit the island state shortly before 11 p.m. local time, with forecasters saying that wind gusts to 30 miles per hour and intense lightning were expected. A flash flood warning was issued for the Big Island until 6:30 the following morning. As the severe weather approached, Todd Wilson, WH6DWF of Waikiki Beach, began receiving reports from Glenn Kadota, AH6IO, on the Bywarn repeater system of a freak electrical storm affecting the windward side of the Big Island. Wilson then relayed this information to the National Weather Service office in Honolulu. As the storm progressed, AH6IO was reporting lightning strikes due north of his station location. A few hours later, WH6WDF began receiving new severe weather reports that he again forwarded to the National Weather Service. Soon, the reports were of downed trees, lightning strikes, heavy rains, and dime-sized hail. News reports mentioned a sinkhole that swallowed a full-size pickup truck on a heavily traveled road. Fortunately, the driver emerged with only minor injuries. The storms continued for about 12 hours, as did the ham radio response. Other hams involved in this severe weather alert included Mark Foster, WH6IM, Scott Bosshart, KH7SB, Glenn Kadota, AH6IO, Robert Oliver, NH6AH, Greg Datloff, WH7FC, and Bob Schneider, AH6J, and several other radio amateurs. All in all, another good job, well done, by the ham radio community of Hawaii when they were needed the most. The Voice of Russia, formerly known as Radio Moscow, is not going QRT after all. A few weeks ago, we reported on an all-encompassing external media realignment edict that had been issued by Russia's President Vladimir Putin. One that had, at least on the surface, spelled an end to Russia's external shortwave broadcast service. But SWL blogger Tom Witherspoon, K4SWL, reports that he was curious if this move might have changed so he contacted the organization to see if it had any official word regarding its future. To his delight, Witherspoon received the following response. We quote, "We are glad to let you know that the Voice of Russia will stay on the air in 2014. However, considerable changes in our frequency schedule are expected. The information on the updated frequency chart will become available on the Voice of Russia's website before the new year at voiceofrussia.com/radio_broadcast/frequencies. So please stay logged in." Unquote. Obviously, this will be a pleasant New Year's gift to shortwave listeners the world over. More is on Tom's SWLing post blog at tinyurl.com/russia-shortwave-2014. NASA astronaut Mike Hopkins, KF5LJG, has taken what might be the ultimate self-portrait from Earth orbit. This while on a spacewalk outside the International Space Station on Christmas Eve to help to change out a cooling pump module on the exterior of the orbiting outpost. The picture shows the spacesuit-clad Hopkins silhouetted against a blue planet Earth with the International Space Station reflected in his helmet faceplate. And, if we may be so bold, we predict could become a symbol of man's conquest of the final frontier. You can see it for yourself at tinyurl.com/Hopkins-in-space. An interesting statistic, courtesy of the Southgate News, quoting figures posted by Joe Spironi, AH0A's website, Southgate notes that Japan, which at one time had more radio amateurs than any other nation in the world, has been losing them at what we might call an alarming rate. Since 1996, the hobby has been in sharp decline, with the number of JA amateur radio stations falling by over 65%. Put into raw numbers, back in 1996, Japan had 1,350,127 license holders, while in 2009, which is the latest year for Spironi's statistics, the number was down to 489,256. It appears that 2001 was the biggest loss for ham radio in Japan, with 135,395 hams leaving the hobby. You can see the numbers for yourself on the web at tinyurl.com/Japan-ham-statistics. In DX Upfront, word that the ARRL's DXCC desk has confirmed that the 2012 and 2013 ZD9KX operation Tristan da Cunha and Go Islands has been approved for credit. If you filed a prior request for this operation and had it rejected, please contact Bill Moore, NC1L, via email to bmoore@arrl.org to be placed on the list to have your DXCC record updated. Capitalizing on the current season of almost total darkness in Northern Europe, a subgroup of the Z81X and OF9X teams are in the Åland Islands to activate OG0A on low bands and WARC bands through January 13th. The OH0X contest site is being used as the base camp, with 160-meter slopers and a two-element 80-meter beam atop a 140-foot rotating tower. Main activity will be on CW, but there may be some SSB and RTTY used occasionally. QSL OG0A via OH2BH. And as a side note, planners say that this operation is dedicated to the next Youth on the Air summer camp due to be held in Finland next July 15th through the 22nd. And we will have more DX-related news later on in this week's report. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W6JW repeater serving the city of Santa Clarita, California. Federal emergency managers are considering replacing part of FEMA's current emergency alert system with a commercial alternative. This is because the data storage system has not met the government's expectations. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has the details.
According to contracting documents posted by the Federal Emergency Management Agency on December 27th, it is now looking for a commercially built data storage alternative for its integrated public alert and warning system and open platform for emergency networks, or IPAWS, open system. One that will enable faster action and better communication between federal, state, and tribal officials and the public. It also has to be a storage and retrieval system that uses more advanced storage technology, including possibly placing some portions of the system in the cloud. For those who may have never heard the term, in its most basic form, the cloud is a euphemism for off-site secure data storage. This is a model of networked enterprise storage where data is accumulated in virtualized pools, which are generally operated by third parties. These are mostly hosting companies that operate large data centers. Their customers are people or businesses that require their data to be hosted off-site, so they simply buy or lease storage capacity from them. FEMA says that its custom-built IPAWS Open has not met a slate of minimum standards, such as operating with 99.9% uptime and allowing the president and other officials to alert the public about emergencies within 10 minutes. Rather, it has been dogged by glitches, too many layers of technical bureaucracy, and mainly insufficient storage space. The current IPAWS Open system transmits from emergency messages to citizens through numerous channels, including local alert systems, traditional broadcast media, the internet, and cell phones. It also needs to be quickly expandable to new public communication systems and platforms as they are created. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
The complete 13-page document in PDF format can be downloaded at tinyurl.com/FEMA-IPAWS-RFI. Just click on the link in the upper right corner of the page. The Minority Media and Telecommunications Council and several other such groups are pushing FCC Chairman Thomas Wheeler to act on an advisory committee recommendation, one that tells the agency to promptly resolve any financial and technical hurdles to providing emergency alert warnings to non-English speakers. In a December 16th letter to Wheeler, the groups note that the advice for prompt action on this matter was given over 8 years ago following Hurricane Katrina. They point out that six rounds of pleadings since that time have resulted in no steps to ensure that multilingual emergency communications will be available during and after major emergencies. This latest letter follows recent meetings between Minority Media and Telecommunications Council executives and FCC officials to make the same point face-to-face. United Kingdom-based InnoVentennas has acquired the Force 12 antenna company and product line and has moved the Force 12 production from Texas to Grand Junction, Colorado. This is a facility to be shared with InnoVentennas America. InnoVentennas founder Justin Johnson, G0KSC, was in Colorado late last year to assist in laying out and setting up the factory. The company expects full production to be underway sometime this month. InnoVentennas says it plans to produce updated versions of classic Force 12 antennas, as well as all new models. Meantime, InnoVentennas in the United Kingdom is now manufacturing Force 12 products for the European market at its Canvey Island plant. RF amplifier manufacturer Tokyo High Power, formerly known as Tokyo High Power Research Institute, has filed for bankruptcy. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with what's known so far.
At the outset, most of this information comes by way of a posting on the Ham Radio Outlet website. It says that the best it can determine is that the dissolution of Tokyo High Power appears to have occurred on or around December 25th of 2013. Also, that this action in Japan appears to be similar to a Chapter 7 bankruptcy filing here in the United States, as the process in this case appears to be the liquidation of organizational assets in order to attempt to fund some portion of its debt obligations. This in turn appears to indicate that a court has deemed that Tokyo High Power is unable to effectively be reorganized under Japan's Civil Reconstruction Code. Tokyo High Power, formerly known as the Tokyo High Power Research Institute, was founded back in 1975. Since then, it has become an industry leader in military, medical, commercial, and amateur radio products. Ham Radio Outlet notes that it has not been directly contacted by Tokyo High Power's home office in Japan concerning any of the information provided in this report. In fact, it learned of this very much like the general public. It says that only after enlisting the assistance of two separate Japanese translators has it been able to determine that the reports of Tokyo High Power's bankruptcy appear to be true. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
No reason was given for the sudden demise of Tokyo High Power. Ham Radio Outlet customers are advised to see www.hamradio.com/news.cfm for more details. Another view of the story is on the ARRL news pages at arrl.org. The NAB show and the Dubai World Trade Center announced they will partner to produce the 2014 CABSAT conference. Celebrating its 20th anniversary, CABSAT is the region's leading annual event focusing on the broadcast, satellite, and broader media industry. The two-day conference, to be held March 11th to the 12th at the Dubai World Trade Center, attracts attendees from the Middle East, Africa, and South Asia who are actively engaged in the creation, management, and delivery of entertainment and news content. The latest YASME Excellent Award winners have been announced. The 2013 recipients include Tom Roscoe, K8CX, Lee Sawkins, VE7CC, John Devildeer, ON4UN, Michael Carroll, N4MC, Eldon Lewis, K7LS, Dean Gibson, AE7Q, Joseph Spironi, AH0A, Ken Clairbout, K4ZW, and Ashraf Chabane, 3V/KF5EYI. The YASME Excellence Award is in the form of a cash grant and an individually engraved crystal globe. More information on both the YASME Foundation and its awards program is online at www.yasme.org. The Society of Broadcast Engineers bi-monthly newsletter, The Signal, reports that Kim Owens has been named the organization's educational director. In her new position, Owens will coordinate the Society's educational programming, which ranges from webinars to workshops, and the SBE Technical Presenters Group. In fulfilling her duties, Owens will regularly work with SBE Education Committee Chairman Wayne Pessina, N1WP, and other committee members. According to Dr. Ken Silberman, KB3LLA, NASA is looking to increase the number of students with disabilities pursuing science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM careers, through its internship programs. Writing in the year-end edition of the Handy Ham newsletter, KB3LLA says that students can apply for summer 2014 internships immediately, with the deadline for submitting applications being Saturday, March 1st. The agency will begin extending offers to students as early as Thursday, January 16th. Those interested can apply at intern.nasa.gov. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. The average amount of electricity consumed in U.S. homes has fallen to levels not seen in more than a decade. This is likely due to the introduction of more energy-efficient appliances and other consumer electronics, leading to overall power usage being on track to decline by the end of 2013 for the third year in a row. According to the Energy Information Administration, the end of 2013 level expected is around 10,819 kilowatt-hours per household. That is the lowest level since 2001, when households averaged 10,535 kilowatt hours. And even more interesting is that this decline has occurred even though we now use more electric and electronic devices in our daily lives. You can read one of several in-depth reports on this phenomenon at tinyurl.com/less-electric-use. Australia's Tablelands Radio and Electronics Club has been issued the special event call sign VK4XQA. This to celebrate the centenary of the first license issued in the state of Queensland. On February 7, 1914, Marcus J.G. Brims, who lived in the far north town of Mareeba, became the first licensed amateur radio operator in the state when he was issued the call letters XQA. At that time, he was permitted 76 watts output and limited to the 160-meter band. But his operating did not last very long. A few months later, on August 16th, his permit was revoked due to the outbreak of World War I, and his equipment was surrendered to the Postmaster General's Department for storage for the duration of the conflict. Now, 100 years later, his being the first Queenslander to take to the airwaves will be commemorated in an on-the-air award program starting this February 7th and ending August 6th. Those contacting Three Tablelands members on any high-frequency amateur band will be eligible for a commemorative certificate. A roster of operators with operating times and bands will be posted at www.treclub.org.au before the start of the award period. South Africa AMSAT has announced that its annual Space Communication Symposium will be held on Saturday, May 24th, this at the Innovation Hub in Pretoria. Proposals for papers to be presented at the gathering are now solicited. Those interested in taking part are asked to submit a brief overview of their planned paper by March 15th to samsat@entecom.co.za. Again, that's samsat@intecom.co.za. Authors will be advised of the acceptance of their paper by March 31st. Final written papers will be required by April 30th, and PowerPoint presentations no later than May 15th. Also, please include a short biography and a photograph of yourself. Registration for the symposium will open on February 1st. More information is on the web at www.amsatsa.org.za. According to VK8NSB, his slow scan TV repeater on 28.700 MHz transmits a beacon picture every 60 minutes, and there are 12 pictures in total. VK8NSB says that he is now offering those that receive all 12 pictures in full a special award. Once you have received all 12 pictures, please email Stuart to yk8nsb@hotmail.com. Include all 12 pictures in JPEG format, and VK8NSB will send you the award via return email. More information can be obtained on the VK8SNB webpage on QRZ.com. In DX, word that the only two stations in the South Sudan are off the air due to the current internal political strife. These are Z81B and Z81D. And indications are that there will not be any further ham radio signals from that new nation until conditions stabilize. More on this as information becomes available. DXWorld.net reports that WA5A will be on the air / 5Z4 from Kenya until about January 28th. His operation will be holiday style on the high-frequency bands, QSL via his home call sign. LA7GIA is expected to be active from Malawi as 7Q7GIA for 1 week in May or June. QSLs will via his home call sign. No other information is available at this time. IK2PZC will be active from Morocco as 5C2P between February 6th and the 9th. His operation will be on the high-frequency bands using SSB and RIDI. QSL via IK2PZC. ON7WP /C5WP has announced that he and ON7YK /C5YK are, or will be, the only two permanent licensed hams in the Gambia for 2014, at least as of now. More information is at C5CP on QRZ.com. YV5IAL will be active /CE2 from Valparaiso, Chile through January 30th. His operation will be on 40 through 10 meters using PSK31 with some SSB. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. Lastly, F6BLP will be operational from Senegal through January 31st as 6W7SK. His location will be about 80 kilometers south of the city of Dakar. Activity will be holiday style, operating mainly CW on 80 through 10 meters. Some 160 meters is possible, QSL to F6BLP, either direct or via the Bureau. And finally this week, have you ever wondered what happens inside a rechargeable battery? If so, you're not alone, as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK.
Scientists are still searching for clues to the processes that takes place inside rechargeable batteries. This as part of the ongoing quest to create more powerful, longer-lasting, and cheaper energy storage devices. Now a team of researchers with the Department of Energy's Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, in cooperation with other research centers, have discovered how to unlock some of the secrets hidden within rechargeable batteries. So far, most of the research into batteries has focused on studying the electrolyte interface layer. This is a coating that accumulates on an electrode's surface and dramatically influences battery performance. But until recently, the research has been limited because most high-powered microscope work is done under dry conditions, while most batteries contain liquids. As such, the liquid has slowed the ability to conduct this type of research. To overcome this, researchers have created a special dry battery for their tests. The battery contains one dime-sized silicone electrode and one lithium electrode, sandwiching a bath of solid electrolyte. This configuration permits the flow of ions, yet still allows microscopic study, which in turn has allowed the team to study the electrode's behavior. The researchers say this new study could be the next step in the ongoing quest to create longer-lasting rechargeable batteries. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, in Zion, Illinois.
The work, as published in a recent issue of the journal Nano Letters, could eventually lead to better rechargeable batteries. More is online at tinyurl.com/new-battery-research. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, near Houston, Texas, saying a very happy new year, 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.